For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Milanville community member Don Hamilton is retired from the National Park Service, and he's eager to share his knowledge about the ecosystems pertaining to the Delaware River. Today, he'll share some knowledge on the eagle population in this area. Then we'll hear more sentiments about the historic Skinner's Falls Bridge that's fated to be repaired, replaced, or removed. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In Tel Aviv's Hostage Square today, applause broke out when video screens show the release of three more hostages. Another public display, Hamas released the three, handing them over to the Red Cross in the Gaza city of Khan Yunis as part of the ceasefire deal that nearly collapsed earlier this week. In return, Israel began releasing more than 350 Palestinian prisoners and detainees. The first bus was greeted by a cheering crowd of relatives and supporters in the West Bank. Some had been serving life sentences for deadly attacks on Israelis. Most were detained by Israeli forces during the war and released today to their families. NPR's producer Anas Baba is in Gaza.
This is the sound of a Palestinian mother that she saw her own son for the first time in 14 months after he was arrested in Gaza City while he was evacuating at one of the checkpoints. The mother that weeps from joy, once she saw him, she just started to cry.
The National Weather Service is warning of the potential for life-threatening flash flooding this weekend, with the greatest risk in parts of northwestern Tennessee and western Kentucky, where Karen Czar reports from. Member station WUKY.
The National Weather Service has issued a flood watch that covers the entire state of Kentucky, prompting Governor Andy Beshear to issue a preemptive state of emergency.
We hope it continues to move northward and misses most of Kentucky, but we have to prepare for significant rain.
The Kentucky Emergency Operations Center and units of the Kentucky National Guard have been activated. Beshear has also activated the state's price gouging laws, which makes it illegal for businesses to raise prices on necessary goods and supplies during an emergency. For NPR News, I'm Karen Czar in Lexington.
Employees at the Department of Housing and Urban Development are among the federal workers bracing for what could be major layoffs amid the firings of thousands. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports.
HUD's union president said three officials confirmed the overall target for layoffs was 50%, and some areas could lose up to 75% of staff. One employee who learned of the plan in a meeting said colleagues were visibly upset. The union leader said he worries about the economic ripple effect, both on those who may be let go and the people they serve. HUD declined comment, but Housing Secretary Scott Turner has announced his own task force to review spending and target waste and fraud. On Friday, Elon Musk said on X that his Doge team had recovered nearly $2 billion of HUD money he said had been misplaced. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.
And from Washington, you're listening to NPR News.
On this week's On the Media, President Trump purges government websites and targets language.
U.S. Google Map users now see Gulf of America.
The Trump administration wiping clean content from sites under the DHHS umbrella.
Several webpages, including those related to HIV and LGBTQ youth, went dark on Friday.
History rewritten. Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Milanville community member Don Hamilton is retired from the National Park Service, and he's eager to share his knowledge about the ecosystems pertaining to the Delaware River. Today, he'll share some knowledge on the eagle population in this area. Then we'll hear more sentiments about the historic Skinner's Falls Bridge that's fated to be repaired, replaced, or removed. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. Venus has been in the western sky in the evening hours this month. It will continue to be visible in the evening hours after sunset through the third week of March. Venus is currently about halfway up the sky at sunset, and by the third week of March, the planet will set around the same time as the sun. Venus will set about 2 minutes earlier each night. Venus is the third brightest body in the sky, after the Sun and Moon, respectively. Tomorrow evening, Venus will be at its brightest for the year, shining at a magnitude -4.6. The brightness of Venus depends not only on its closeness to Earth, but also on its phase. Because Venus is an inferior planet, lying between Earth and the Sun, it goes through phases just like the Moon. And like the Moon, its phase varies depending on its position relative to Earth. It would seem logical that Venus will be at its brightest when it appears fully illuminated like a full moon. However, when Venus is fully illuminated, it is also at its farthest from Earth. Venus reaches its brightest when less than half its disk is illuminated and is in its crescent phase. When this occurs, Venus is much closer to Earth. Venus will be visible in the western sky beginning at sunset and will be visible until about 8 p.m. Look in the western sky after sunset tomorrow to see Venus at its brightest for the year. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Late winter is a great time to enjoy eagle watching on both sides of the Delaware River Valley. We are gifted with people like Don Hamilton, who was retired from the National Park Service and wants to inspire us about the ecosystems in this area. Here is part of my recent conversation with Don. I know that you volunteer in organizations in our Delaware River Valley community. Let's talk about your involvement in them and how you think that you can inspire people that are concerned about our environment. These volunteer efforts that you do are very positive for the environment. Let's talk about some of them and some of the work that you've done.
Besides our BioBlitz, which was a real team effort, we had a lot of great partners involved in that. And Steve Schwartz, who lives on the river up near Stockport, was a real force behind our BioBlitzes. And having done six of them, I think we've done a pretty good job of helping to document some of our biodiversity. And we found actually a lot of species of new occurrence for some of these locations and in Wayne County and also in Sullivan County, where we've held some of them. It's always a benefit to engage the public and help develop their awareness, understanding, and appreciation for these components of our ecosystem and the value they represent. I've also helped with some of Delaware Highlands Conservancy's bald eagle viewing bus tours in the past, and those are great ecotourism effort to develop people's appreciation for bald eagles and also the habitat needed to support them. And we have a unique population here. We have more eagles here in the wintertime than we do a breeding population in the summer, although our breeding population's quite abundant too. But we have bald eagles that come to this river all the way from the Maritime provinces up in Canada. That's been documented by studies done here that we've partnered with New York State DEC on, and a number of birds were captured and satellite transmitters were put on them, and you could follow their movement back to where they were breeding way up into the Maritime provinces of Canada from here. The Upper Delaware is actually one of the most important and highly used inland bald eagle wintering habitats in the northeast part of the U.S. They come here because there's some open water that remains where they can catch fish, and that's in close proximity to narrow stream valleys on tributaries that are wooded where they can go to communal roosts and get shelter from winter winds. In the wintertime, with bald eagles surviving, it's all about conserving calories. So if they have sheltered winter roosts in proximity to a food source, that's beneficial for them to help them survive the winter and come out of the winter into the spring in good shape for the breeding season. And because of that, we have bald eagles that come here from long distances away, and they have for generations. And it's just one more example of why the Upper Delaware is significant beyond its watershed to these birds that come from far and wide. When you think about sea-run migratory species like American eels, which are declining range-wide, the Delaware River is still habitat that buttresses their populations range-wide, and we have a system here that they can migrate up into. And American eels are fascinating fish. They live for decades in freshwater rivers and streams until they're sexually mature. Then they outmigrate to the ocean and go to an area in the Sargasso Sea in the North Atlantic to spawn. And then their young follow ocean currents and end up at river mouths along the Atlantic coast and come back up into these rivers as elvers and live out the majority of their lives. A study was done outmigrating eels on the St. Lawrence River system, and the average age of an outmigrating eel was 23 years old. So they live for decades up in these systems. And this is actually the last place in the country where there is a commercial fishery that exists for outmigrating American eels, and you will see these eel weirs in place in the river. There are a limited number of licenses. I think we have about 7 or 8 of them operating on the Upper Delaware and some tributaries like the East Branch, and the Neversink River has an eel weir or two, I believe. It's a system that still supports a commercial fishery for these eels, but it's the last place in the country that does, and it's monitored pretty closely, and those licenses are given out by New York State, and operators have to report their catch. It's been determined that it can still sustain a commercial fishery, but I'm not sure how long into the future that may be the case.
Is there a relationship between the eagles and the eels? Do the eagles actually fish for eels?
They do. I've seen pictures of them bringing an eel to the nest, to the young. What's definitely a more important food source for bald eagles is American shad, another sea-run migratory fish. It just so happens that our spring run of American shad occurs at exactly the right time for bald eagles when they're most in need of finding food for their young. Their young require a lot of food. They grow very rapidly. Some of these nests will have young in them by mid-April. So it coincides with the spring run of American shad during a time of greatest provisioning need by adult bald eagles for their young, and it's a tremendous food source.
DelawareHighlands.org has more information on eagles and eagle watching. We'll hear more from community member Don Hamilton on Radio Catskill.
He's eager to share his knowledge about the ecosystems pertaining to the Delaware River. Let's segue now as we continue to share a variety of sentiments regarding the Skinners Falls Bridge. Because it has unique architectural and structural ornamentation, the Skinners Falls Bridge represents historic value to the Delaware River Valley and the Milanville Historic District. On Sunday, January 12th, members of our Delaware River Valley community gathered inside the Union Building in Narrowsburg, New York. I spoke with many participants who expressed their cherished sentiments.
My name is Annie Stanley. I live in Narrowsburg. I'm chair of the Tustin Heritage Community Garden, and I also have Smokey Bell's Art Retreat on the 10-mile river. The Skinners Falls Bridge. I think this whole issue started with fracking, and I think that I remember they were driving the trucks over the Skinners Falls Bridge, the fracking trucks that were doing the test wells, and there was a bunch of us that were even going to bring our mattresses down there and have a slumber party and stop the trucks driving over the bridge. At the time, that was the early days when Damascus Citizens for Sustainability was being created, and there was a whole group of us in town that were fighting fracking. So my theory was that the fracking companies wanted to upgrade the bridges for their trucks. And then when they didn't get the contracts and it was banned, they pulled out the money. And then PennDOT at the time, who might have been pro-fracking, they were like, oh, well, you know, you didn't allow fracking happening, so we're going to let this bridge go to hell. If there is any substantial damage to that bridge, it was caused by the fracking truck. I think the fracking companies should be called responsible for potential damage to the bridge, and they should pay for the damage. It's going to be a real shame if they don't fix it.
Cass Collins. I live in Narrowsburg in the flats. Yeah, my most personal connection to the Skinners Falls Bridge is through the play that Cynthia Nash wrote, Crossings. When I first read that play and I read the first monologue of the old woman and her connection to the bridge, I felt that character inhabit me, and I immediately knew what she was feeling and her description about the water being together with her husband on the bridge, together in our love, the river's endless flow below us and the sky that looked like it would never be anything but blue. And that really spoke to me. And I love the surface of the bridge. I love the little cupcake steel ornaments of it. And of course, it's between our state and another state. It unites us so beautifully. Below it, people love to play and swim and come together in the warmer months. The idea of them blowing it up is like, it makes my heart hurt. I feel like it's a knife in the community.
Jim Stratton. I think, personally, that a bridge is not just something to go from one end to another. It's a symbolic thing because you have the beauty of having the river, the beauty of having the land around it, and the trees, the ice, for that matter, brings everything to a kind of, I don't know, feeling of, it's your own backyard. It's a sense that it's part of your home. And when you deny that, when you are not permitted to go from one side of your home to another, to some extent, something's been taken away from you. I don't want to see that happen.
I'm Joanne Brinkerhoff from Milanville. And I used to live at the house that was right on the Pennsylvania side of the Skinner's Falls Bridge. And the house that I was living in was built by L.J. Hocker, who was one of the people on the bridge plaque, who was the Milanville Bridge Company. So we had all types of memorabilia at the house about the bridge and about the toll house that was there originally. And the bridge was ever present in my life. For 25 years, we lived in that house.
You could see that bridge from your front porch.
From my front porch and from my bedroom window. It was ever present. Sometimes we'd even see people jumping off the bridge to swim, which they weren't supposed to. It's just an amazing vista to look out, and the river was constantly changing. You'd have it frozen over in the winter and, you know, running rapids in the summer, but always the bridge there. And we had friends on both sides of the river. Actually, the people that originally owned our house after the Hockers built it were the Lothians, who built on the New York side of the river. So we had a commonality there with the house and the bridge, and, you know, visited back and forth. And when I sold that house, the Lothians bought it back. And now all their grandchildren are living there in that house. And so for them to go back and forth to see their family, they have to drive like 10 miles now. The bridge has to stay. My late husband, Bob, was a real preservation enthusiast. He knew everything there was to know about the river and historic preservation, and got really, really involved. In fact, there was at the time an organization called the Milanville Historic Society that he got our house registered on that. And I always think about how he would feel to know about the bridge today, that he'd be right here with us all, his spirit, to preserve the bridge.
When you looked at the bridge, or were standing on the bridge, you'd look out and felt like you were in a Currier and Ives painting by Fanny Palmer.
And he was a big collector of Currier and Ives paintings. And also our very good friend Jim McGinley from Milanville, a prolific and wonderful painter. We have many of his paintings of the bridge. He was very connected to the river and did amazing artwork around the bridge and Milanville and Coshecton and the whole area. And he's now gone. But
his work and the work of Ed Wesley, they're very vibrant in this community to carry on the wishes of these people that really wanted to preserve this bridge. So they might have laid some of the inspirational groundwork, but here we are carrying it forward. And the music of Poison Love at the celebrations of the Skinner's Falls Bridge is extremely impressive.
Thank you so much, Rosie, and thanks for doing all of this, and you and all the people that put this together. And the question now is, what's the next step?
Yeah, the next step is to continue to look for legal actions to preserve it. You want to talk about the inspiration of the music that you had for the play?
Yeah, well, the bridge song, I actually wrote that song because I was angry. I wrote it when they closed the bridge and when I found out it wasn't going to open anytime soon. I just went home and wrote that song, within a couple of hours, because I just needed a catharsis. And I didn't think we would ever perform it or that anything would ever come of it. But then when Caroline and Eric approached us and told us that they were producing a play that was written by Cynthia Nash and it was about the bridge, would we be willing to do some original music for it? I pulled out that song. And it was just perfect. And I did have a lot of other songs that were bridge-related or river-related, because the river is a constant in my life. That's my inspiration for writing. It's all about the people who live here and where we are and how lucky we are to be here. And so it's my total inspiration.
Thank you, Joanne.
I'm Kathy Geary, and it was a privilege to host the celebration of Skinner's Falls Bridge here at the Narrowsburg Union on January the 12th, 2025. And I was really astounded by the passion and the depth of expression from the poets, Eric Balin, Sheila Dugan, and Tracy Goss Ronse. The Farm Arts Collective did an incredible, a childhood story, London Bridge is falling down, and they turned it into a very powerful statement. And the music from The Crossing and all the performers that we had, Lucas Rotman was singing, and all the tributes. And then towards the end of the program, after we'd all been celebrating and feeling really good, Tom Rue got up and delivered the hard information, the history of what has been going on with the preservation and maintenance of the bridge. Every other bridge on the river is managed by, one is managed by the New York Department of Transportation, the next one is PennDOT, Department of Transportation, every other bridge down the river, and it's PennDOT's responsibility. And so many facts came out, but the turnout and the incredible experience of having this community sit intently and listen and focus on what was said. It gave me such a sense of activism and of our community come together. It was truly a privilege to be a part of it. Cynthia Nash produced this thing, and she was tireless in reaching out to so many different people. And it was a pleasure to host, but I really feel like the majority of the work was really Cynthia Nash. What an amazing woman.
I'm Cynthia Nash, and I'm deeply moved, as always, by our community, how we come together, and particularly in this case, how we've let go of party lines and everything else to stand together for the bridge. There were people from all walks of life here, and that was what we wished for, and we had amazing performances by our local talent and, you know, our informed speakers. So I'm deeply moved. That's how I feel about today. And I leave here with hope.
What is your sentiments about saving the Skinners Falls Bridge?
I remember the first time I came over the bridge. The bridge saved my life one night when I had a severe asthma attack. I would not have made it to the ER without that bridge being there. But it's integral to my life as the trees, as the river. It's powerful presence, and it is irreplaceable. It is absolutely irreplaceable. It's an incredible gateway between Sullivan County and Wayne County. And if it's preserved, it's an opportunity for the two counties to really foster more tourism. I tell people all the time when they see my pictures of Wayne County, they say, where are you? Are you in Vermont? I say, no, I'm in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. And you can get to it in less than 2 hours from New York. That's something that the county could do. It could be an exquisite gateway into northeastern Pennsylvania. I'm in Milanville, walking distance to the bridge. When the bridge is active, the lights from the bridge, people crossing it, shine into my kitchen at night. Now it's quiet. It's silent. It's waiting to breathe again. But its heart is still there.
And the heart of the community is with you. Thank you for producing this January 12th at the Union. You did a fabulous job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It wasn't just me. It was a lot of shared energy, as always, around here.
You can view all the January 12th Skinners Falls Bridge Celebration event performances on the WJFF Radio Catskill Facebook page. More information on the history of Skinners Falls Bridge is available online, DamascusCitizensForSustainability.org.
Isn't it worth saving? Isn't it worth saving? Isn't it worth saving? Save it all from the wrecking ball. Save it all from the wrecking ball.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Delaware River Valley community member Don Hamilton, and those folks for sharing their sentiments on the Skinners Falls Bridge. Annie Stanley, Jim Stratton, Cass Collins, Kathy Geary, Joanne Brinkerhoff, and Cynthia Nash. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.